This episode of Excuse the Intermission is presented in partnership with the Grand Cinema. The Grand Cinema is the South Sound's nonprofit home for independent, international, and local film. The theater strives to enrich the lives and enhance the cultural vitality of the greater Tacoma community through the art of film. The Grand Cinema is dedicated to providing their signature art house movie-going experience in a safe and healthy fashion. There is something for everyone at the Grand Cinema. Along with their wonderful weekly programming, they are also home to the Weird Elephant Late Night Film Series, the Silver Screen Society, Free Family Flicks, and Tacoma's Outdoor Movie Series. You can also inquire about theater rentals at the Grand Cinema by contacting their box office or website. The staff and volunteers cannot wait to make your experience at the movies a memorable one, so grab your friends, grab your tickets, and don't forget to stop at the concession stand for the Grand Signature Popcorn. The Grand Cinema is located at 606 Fawcett Avenue in Tacoma, Washington, and open 7 days a week. You can find them online at www.grandcinema.com and on Instagram and Facebook at The Grand Cinema. How's it? I'm Alex McCauley.
I'm Max Fosberg.
And I am Grant Colombini.
And this is Excuse the Intermission, a discussion show surrounding backpacks and gradebooks. That's right, ahead on today's show, the three of us will be creating yet another top five list, this time with films that all lean heavily on the school setting. For the first time in a long time, classrooms are full and back in session across the United States, and things are no different here on the podcast. So take your seat. Get out your textbooks because we're about to take roll next on ETI.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Juan Carlos, and I am the host of the Revisionary Podcast.
And I'm producer Phil. I make them sound good.
If you've never heard of the Revisionary Podcast, the way it works is we bring on guests, usually comedians, who tell a nonfiction story about their lives in which they wish things had gone a little bit differently.
And we give them the opportunity to retell that story, in which they can change any fact or details they want. Then we'll discuss the impact of those changes on their story. We're happy to announce we're now on the Chatter Network.
And make sure you check out the Revisionary Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Before we get started, we just wanted to remind you that if you feel that what we do here on Excuse the Intermission holds value, we are now live on Patreon. You can support the show by becoming either an associate producer at the cost of just $3 a month or executive producer at the cost of $8 a month. And in return, we'll be treated to all kinds of bonus content, including monthly newsletters, video chats with us, early releases on new podcasts, and a monthly bonus episode, the most recent of which is a film commentary track for the 2019 movie Uncut Gems. We hope you consider subscribing to our page and greatly appreciate all the support that we've already had. All right, guys. Ready to go back to school?
Gold Slip.
You remember those?
I do. Yeah. I got many of those.
We had pink slips.
Ah. Yeah. No, we had gold slips. No,
we had gold. And that was a little confusing because I thought you wanted the gold.
Always. You thought you want you a did gold well. Star. Yeah, you want to be on the dean's list, things like that.
I remember I had the highest gold slips my seventh grade year of the seventh grade class.
There you go.
I think I was somewhere around like 26 gold slips throughout the year.
Did a counselor or somebody ever pull you aside and say, you're going to amount to a nothing based off? Like
they said, you're going to be talking into a microphone in a basement for the rest of your life.
Man, having a mom as a teacher and a dad as a principal, I could not get in trouble at school because that shit followed me home. Like if I got trouble at school, I would then get in trouble at home. And it was just a double whammy. So I tried to stay away. I flew under the radar most of school.
I feel like, we all went to school kind of at an interesting time there where technology was just starting to catch up with our parents. We were kind of already pretty adept at using, email and different telephone numbers to kind of try to divert any sort of trouble that may come our way. But now I feel like, oh, man, if we had to go to school with, I'm sure, all the tablet interactions and the instant gratification that parents can get from the administration, things like
kids,
that.
Kids are learning coding now and hacking their teachers' computers, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I have a tablet in my classroom and the parents, if I don't update it 4 or 5 times a day, they're just like, what's going on? Is everything okay? Wow. I'm just like, they want that information.
Do you guys play Oregon Trail at all in that class?
No. The game. No, we have like Tomb Runner and stuff. We have like 3D insanely
Plants vs. Zombies.
Insanely good graphic games. There's no solitaire. There's no snake. Nothing like that. But no, I think we're all really excited for this episode, seeing as how we know that the next handful of months are guaranteed to keep us busy with some major releases and the subsequent Oscar buzz that'll follow. But before all of that, we like to kind of always have some fun and sort of invent these new genres of movies. So, of course, I'm curious as to how your guys' respective viewing week went when you went back and watched these movies. And then how did you ultimately make your list, kind of your key ingredients for a back-to-school flick?
Well, I definitely – my list probably trends like high school or older. I think those movies are kind of – although I do have one that's probably middle school, but yeah, I think those movies, those back to school movies, probably hit a little bit better on all cylinders as far as you know, connection with the characters and whatnot. You know, I don't want to spoil anything for you guys, but I don't have Kindergarten Cop on my list. You know, also a couple of my movies talk about how like the education system in general is like broken.
Very
and
flawed.
A hoax. Yeah. And so a lot of times it's kind of a group of people coming together to maybe make their own way or like fix some sort of education system going on. But and all of them are comedies.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Nice.
Or excuse me. One is not a comedy.
Okay.
Yeah,
I bet you I know which one that is.
my list were kind of like the first five that popped into my head when we came up with this idea. But then my list of honorable mentions just kept going and going and like just realizing how many school setting or school experience movies there are. So my list is basically there's like two that are like a school is the setting, doesn't really revolve around that, and then there's two that is like the school experience, you know, being one of these characters, being in, you know, the different, you know, cliques, the different, you know, the what you talk about ingredients. One thing I love about all these high school movies is there is a flyer for the party that they yeah. hand out. Yeah. That did not happen. You did not make a flyer for the party that you're having to let all the adults know where you're like that there was going to be a party. That was all like word of mouth. Or at least in my experience.
Okay, so funny side story here. Max and I one time were part of a group that like threw an in-school party. It was during like one of the study hall periods that we used to have at the beginning yeah. of the morning. And we made flyers saying like, come to room 22, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And those were all over the school somehow. Like we made a couple of just like as a joke, I think probably based off of things we've seen in the movie. And pretty soon there were like 200 people in this one classroom and the teacher just had no idea what to do. Everyone got in trouble.
That's fantastic.
Funny stuff. No, I'm right there with you though. My honorable mentions is 17 films deep.
Yeah.
Just because it kept going. It kept going. And then also I'm right there with you as well when I tried to find that balance between what did I have it here where it's like, you know, being in the classroom actually with the kids or just like the coming of age experience yeah. of having high schoolers in your movie. Like one that I'm sure we'll probably talk about, you know, I can just kind of mention the director, but like a lot of Richard Linklater movies they take place in or around a school, but it's really about like the interpersonal relationships between those characters. So that was like the fine line that I had to walk mm-hmm. with my list there. You know, unfortunately, a lot of these movies, I think a lot of the ones at least that kind of popped into my head, they kind of have that white savior complex going on, especially if they were from the 80s and the 90s, early 2000s. A lot of times it's a white man or a white woman coming into an underprivileged school, inner city school with much, you know, much to do and trying to right the wrongs of everybody involved and things like that. And so I tried to kind of stay away from those, but I do think that's a pretty key ingredient in a lot of these school movies. Expectations are a big thing, whether it's our main character, whether it's our main teacher who we're spending time with. Everyone has like a lot of expectations in these movies. There's pressure to do good, get straight A's. There's pressure to, this is your one last chance. If maybe it's the teacher, something along those lines, which then also kind of goes into, I think that these movies all kind of cross genres, where Max, you said you had a lot of comedies. Mine are all over the board.
Yeah.
Because these can get pretty heavy. I even have in my horror or in my honorable mentions a couple horror films where I think like the school was a great setting for these scary movies. And then also too, my last fun thing I have is that not in all of these, but I love a scene where the teacher doesn't believe that a kid is as smart as they really are, you know, where they think the kid's just fucking off because he's making smart ass comments, you know, trying to get laughs out of his his peers. And then the teacher turns their back and says something like, "You're never going to amount to anything." And then the kid's like, "Yeah, well, actually, in 1712 and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then the teacher's like has that moment like, "Oh, I'm doing good in this kid's life because like they're a smart ass, but they're learning." Like just a major trope in the school movies, I think. So I really got a kick out of going back and watching a lot of these movies. So I'm excited to see kind of where our list land. I think we're going to be able to talk about a bunch of different movies.
I was going to say, judging off of that, I think we're going to have a very diverse and maybe not a lot of crossover.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I would because, be really surprised.
Everything you just said, I was like, man, mine are not that deep movies. They're very surface level popcorn flicks.
I'd be pretty surprised if you guys crossed over onto my list at all. Maybe one.
I might have one. I have a big wild card. Okay.
All right, well, let's get into it. Yeah. Max.
All right.
Hit us with your number five.
Number five is a film from 2006, a comedy that kind of went under the radar, directed by Steve Pink. It's called Accepted.
Oh, nice.
And this has Justin Long. It's got a young Jonah Hill. It's also got the asylum warden from... Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, I know like you're
the bad guy. It's also got Lewis Black in it, who's a great comedian. And it's about this kid who, oddly enough, his name is Bartleby in the movie, which is such a weird name. I always thought that was such a weird choice for Justin Long's character. But he doesn't get into any college. So him and his friends, who also don't get into college, create this fake college, South Harmon College. And out of like an old mental hospital and hijinks, you know, ensues, and Justin Long has some really good speeches, and Jonah Hill does some really funny comedy in this, and a lot of really cool character actors, because it's very much like about, because a bunch of like, you know, outcasts and whatnot come to this technical college. But yeah, and Blake Lively's in it too.
I was gonna say,
she's Bartleby's love interest. But yeah, just a fun movie. I watched it this morning. I knew it was gonna be on my list because it's one of my like underrated, like under the radar comedies from the mid 2000s that I think goes by a lot of people. But yeah, just really really love this. Love the, you know, the whole message is that the college, you know, the American college system is fucked up. It's too expensive. You don't even really like go there to figure out what you love. And so like this South Harmon College that they create is all about you pick your course. They you know, make the curriculum. I really like it as a kid who didn't go to a big university. It resonates with me a lot.
I think that the reason why this movie kind of got don't want to say swept under the rug, but just kind of forgotten, came and went, is because when you're talking about 2006, you're right in that post or right. pre Apatow boom, kind of post rated R comedy boom, where we've already had things like Old School come out, Wedding Crashers come out, and this one just, you know, it's
40 year old virgin is, yeah. I think the same year,
yeah. And so you have you know, it's very endearing now, mm-hmm. because it has aged pretty nicely, where it's not as raunchy as some of those other movies are. That's
but
a good pick.
It's still got some really funny moments.
It was one of those that anytime you were flipping through the channels and it was on Comedy Central or TNT or something, yeah. I was like, yeah, I'll watch this for a little bit.
And you know, shout out to Justin Long.
I mean, I love the guy.
He's just a really watchable actor. Like, yeah, he's just very charming and like just always a guy you want to root for.
He's a guy you want to have a beer with.
Yeah. He's got his own podcast too.
Does he?
Yeah, it's called Life is Too Short.
Oh, I love it.
And it's pretty good. So shout out.
Is that a Jeepers Creepers? Like 3, 4, 5.
Drag
part
me to
segment.
Hell. Yeah. You know,
no, we like Justin Long for sure. Okay, Grant, you're number five.
My number five is one of my favorite feel-good movies, one of my favorite comedies. I'm going with Richard Linklater. I'm going with 2003 School of Rock.
This is on my list as well, at number three.
There you go. Do we want to table it until then?
We can. I have it in my honorable mentions as well. So it's something that I think we all kind of wanted to talk about.
We'll wait till round three.
Okay. So let me just get that down for Grant, though. School of Rock at number five. Okay, cool. Okay, so talking about one of our guys. Here's one of my guys. This is based off a book written by Bret Easton Ellis, most famous for writing American Psycho. But this is the 2002 film Rules of Attraction, directed by Roger Avery. Roger Avery, pretty famous for winning the Best Screenplay Award with Tarantino for Pulp Fiction. Wrote on Reservoir Dogs there a little bit. Really accomplished screenwriter. Writes this film, helps Easton adapt it, directs it, stars James Vanderbeek, Ian Somerhalder, Shannon Sossaman, Jessica Biel, Kate Bosworth, bit parts from like Jay Bruchnell in here, Faye Dunaway pops up, Fred Savage, Eric Stoltz, all kinds of, when I went back and rewatched it, I was just like cracking up at all the people who are in this movie. It's great. Takes place at this fictional college of Camden. Camden's a school that Bret uses in all of his books. Like it gets brought up in, American Psycho, gets brought up in Less Than Zero, one of these liberal arts schools on the East Coast that people just want to go to. Our main character is Sean Bateman here. So it's the younger brother of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. Wow. And that's the James Vanderbeek character. And it's basically just like a love triangle. So a lot of this, we're not in the classroom all that often, but we are on campus. We don't ever really leave the campus. So we're in dormitories. We're in little like shitty diners around this town. And yeah, it's a love triangle between his character, the Ian Somerhalder character, and Shannon Sossaman. And it's really fun because they stay pretty true to the book. This is one of his better adaptations, I think, from a Bret Easton Ellis book. I mean, I love American Psycho, but to adapt American Psycho, that movie should be rated X or something like that. Book is just wild. And this book is really crazy too, but they do a pretty good job staying true to it. I think it was NC-17 upon its first cut, and then they had to bring it down. But you have like different title cards that introduce like different parties as the story is kind of being told. It starts off and then you rewind backwards to like the start of the term, but you get like the start of the world party, a dress to get fucked party, the end of the world party, and these are all like your different like major segments in the movie, which is really fun. The Eric Stoltz character is a professor who just kind of hangs out. Like he's a young professor, so he hangs out at the parties, which I feel like is another like good trope for a college movie, is that one professor doesn't want to like let the college life go quite yet. And so he's partying. You get a bunch of funny townie appearances and townie jokes written in there because I think everyone's familiar with what a townie is, someone who just either comes up to their buddies' colleges, parties on the weekend, or you just live in the town where there's a big university. So you go on campus to parties, stuff like that. There's always like a struggle in this movie of finding someone with a car, which I was cracking up at because I'm like, I know that that's real, especially like we have this at WSU. When you go to Pullman, Washington at WSU, especially if you're an undergrad, you might have a car because you're traveling there to like find a buddy or whatever, but not very many people bring their cars with them that first year. And they're just like walking around the town, things like that. So a lot that you can relate to. And the reason why I love this, you know, going back to the main character being Sean Bateman, is that this is like the type of universe building that I'm so into. When you're just like, I'm making this story that is set like in the 80s, just like how American Psycho is, just like how Less Than Zero is. Without being too explicit, I am just going to like have all these characters exist in the same timeline. So I really like that about it. 2002's Rules of Attraction. If you haven't seen it, you'll know if you'll like, you will know if you're going to like it after the first like 5 minutes. The first 5 minutes are too much for you, just turn it off because the movie doesn't slow down. And yeah, if you really want to dive in, read some of the Bret Easton Ellis stuff. He's a great author.
Number four for me is something that it's a movie that feels a lot more like a documentary than a movie. And that's Gus Van Sant's Elephant.
You dog. List. It's on my honorable mentions because I didn't want to get this dark with people.
Yeah, it's
wow, very dark. Max.
Never even heard of this.
Oh, wow.
This is the one movie that is not the comedy on the list. Oddly enough, I rewatched this a couple months ago, just like randomly, just because I hadn't seen it.
I'm so happy you have this on your list, because I was just going to bring it up at the end and be like, I have Elephant on here, but I don't really want to talk about Elephant.
It is pretty much like a documentary. It's not a documentary. It's a fictional film, but it looks a lot like a documentary. It's all about a school shooting that is very close to the Columbine.
Totally mirrors Columbine.
Yeah, almost maybe shot for shot. Well, shot.
I get what you're trying to say here. Yeah, this is almost why I didn't want to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very raw. It's very dark. It's very sad. But it's shot in such a cool way, because you're literally just walking around the school with kids, and you're following these different kids, but then they intertwine.
There's like some 15-minute long takes in this film.
Oh, wow.
But really you see, cool. I mean, and you see where these shots intertwine from different angles, right? And it's just like, it's literally over just a day at school. But yeah, it's a very dark, dark film. So if you're, you know, sensitive to that stuff, you know, be careful going into it. But yeah, it's extremely interesting. And Gus Van Sant, I feel like definitely in the 90s was like a huge deal, but like he has kind of tapered off a bit. And so it's cool to go back and watch some of his work. And this was before, was this before? This was after Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yes. Yeah. A couple years after.
But yeah, again, just a very raw, real depiction of that horrible, horrible day in Colorado.
For us here in the Pacific Northwest, and he sets it in his hometown of Portland, where most of his movies, you know, I'm thinking of My Own Private Idaho, things like that, where he loves to use kind of the Portland Pacific Northwest setting. So that also is, I mean, it kind of is just like an endearing thing, but also makes it more tragic, because it really feels like you're watching this and something like this could happen in your backyard.
Yeah.
A very polarizing film, where I hate to almost use the word like think piece, because there was so much being made about like Eric and Dylan, the guys who did Columbine and the Trenchcoat Mafia, and what did the public not really know about these guys? How easy is it? Gun control, all this stuff, you know, Michael Moore goes out and makes Bowling for Columbine, and this whole story like took over the nation. Van Sant waits a couple years, makes this film. I think it might have won the Palme d'Or at Cannes, but I know it was at least like up for it there and got a lot of recognition. Nothing very beyond that, really. But an incredibly good, effective, and sad movie. I'm very happy and impressed you have this on your list. This is good.
Dang.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to shift gears from that and go with my number four, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, Robert Zemeckis's Back to the Future. The high school setting of 1985, and then you get to go to the 1955 version of the same high school and kind of see school life back then for like a little snippet is a lot of fun. The Enchantment Under the Sea dance segment is classic. You get Biff and his cronies, you know, spiking the punch, and you know, like kind of like classic high school tropes, but back in the 50s, you know, reading Ooh La La magazine and stuff like that. But yeah, Back to the Future is great. When you said school movies, I immediately was like, well, dude, that entire movie basically takes place at his high school, Beverly Hills.
Sure does.
Or not Beverly Hills. What is it? Hill Valley.
Hill Valley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you get hit on by your mom.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's fun. What is that? John Mulaney, when he's talking about the guys who have to pitch that movie. He's like, yeah. And then the son's going to be with the mom, and then the rapist is going to show up, and the dad's going to have to fight the rapist off the mom. Having to pitch that movie, it does not hold up. But it's still a great fun flick.
I mean, it's a classic, absolute classic in cinema, I would say.
Yeah, every scene that you see that's either become like, you know, an image on Twitter or something like that, it is always like at the dance, and it's at the school. It, you know, you think about it as like this science fiction kind of like fun story, but it is a high school movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
That's a good one. Okay, my number four is the 2004 film Mean Girls.
On the honorable mention list.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
I almost thought about not having it on here because I feel like I just kind of talked about it on our Perfect Movies episode, but I used it as like an example, right? And didn't really get to give it its like proper due. And I think that this is like low key one of the best movies of the 2000s. I think that it is a perfect movie. I mean, what more can you really say about Mean Girls? Everyone's seen it. It's iconic. There is a really fun part about this movie that isn't like when you go back and think 2004, we see it like we were eighth grade, freshman year, around that age, 15 years old. We think of that being like, oh, everyone kind of like already had cell phones and technology was all over the place. It really wasn't. You watch this movie and there's still like the really funny like three-way phone calls that the girls do with each other, the four-way phone calls, like figuring out who's still on the line, things of that, you know, the mom jumping on the line. Really, really funny stuff. Where you're like, this movie was made, it's good, just I'm gonna use this word so much, at a perfect time, where it's just like you make this movie now and it's like, oh, my mom's on my Twitter feed or my mom's, you know, on my Instagram, she's sending me a friend request or something like that. The Amy Poehler character would have to be doing all kinds of just like crazy elaborate shit like that. But you get like the talent show, the winter talent show in this movie, which I think is another just major high school trope. There almost always has to be some sort of performance art piece.
Competition.
Where, yeah, some sort of competition, some sort of like theater play that comes. You know, I'm thinking of like 21 Jump Street and he's being Peter Pan at the end and all that stuff. Super funny stuff. But so, of course, the girls, they do the whole Jingle Bells thing in here. You get her buddy and he's doing the Christina Aguilera Beautiful on the piano and stuff like that. Just super, super funny stuff. The school here that they use too is so funny. Evanston Town Township High School. Just like Tina Fey wrote a hilarious script on here. Tim Meadows, so fucking funny. So funny in this movie. Everybody is just like perfectly cast. I think it encapsulates that mid to early 2000s high school experience just about as well as any movie ever could and probably ever will. So it had to make the like legitimate list.
I knew it was going to be on your list.
So yeah.
This was on my list, but then I switched it out for Elephant.
Okay.
Just last second because I was like, it's probably going to be on Alex's list. And, you know, it is one of the best like comedies of all time. I mean, it's hilarious.
I love how when we make these lists, like when we do New York, you're like, well, I'm not going to have Taxi Driver because I know Alex will have Taxi Driver. But then like a couple weeks later, can be like, well, I know Alex is going to have Mean Girls. I'm a jack of all trades.
Yeah, no, Mean Girls was an instant classic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was funny the first time I watched it. It's funny every time I watch it. It's a great movie. And you get the janitor from Scrubs.
Yeah. And
Neil Flynn.
It's a great piece of like history because it's like the last time Lindsay Lohan was like a regular person.
100%. Yeah. And it's like and it's like the come up of Rachel McAdams because she does that, I think, in The Notebook in the same year.
Yeah. Lizzie Kaplan before she kind of got big,
for
too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amanda, of course, too. Siegfried. Yeah.
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 Fantastic.
A lot of good
film.
Stuff.
So my number three was School of Rock.
Awesome.
Yeah. Let's do it now.
Totally forgot that this was a Richard Linklater film until I turned it on and I was like, oh, what? Really? And it makes total sense. I mean, it is such a, like you said, feel good, like warm feeling, cozy film that Jack and really launched, I would say, Jack Black, even though he had done stuff before, but like, This is
coming out
time.
Of Tenacious D too, and things like that.
This was this guy could do more than just the, you know, R-rated like raunchy kind of humor.
And it's got one of the best. I mean, the song that they write is like one of the best in movie songs of all time. I can't remember if this was on one of the soundtrack lists.
I think it got brought up.
Might have gotten brought up by Van, I think.
Yeah.
Because, it really launches you into like this whole classic rock. I remember when it came out, like, I was just like, oh my God, what are all these songs? What are all these bands? Like,
Black Keys to Led Zeppelin to Stevie Nicks.
Yeah. It's just fantastic. Joan Cusack also gives an awesome performance, a very underrated actress during her time. And like, again, just a launching pad for Jack Black.
Well, and it's great that they got all the kids that can play those instruments and it is those kids and they made that band and they did that song. I think it is like incredibly cool because you talk about the rarity of good kid actors and then you land on School of Rock, which, you know, is hit and miss, but there's some of them that, you know, like Miranda Cosgrove is in there and she goes on to do some stuff. And there's a couple other that you'll notice that still kind of did some work after that, you know, as they got older. But it's just like, it is awesome. It is just awesome to see, like, you talk about how you brought up the like problem with the education system and how like these kids that are in private school just didn't have a chance to express themselves. And here comes along this loser that that just got kicked out of his band and gives them this incredible opportunity. So it's just, it was just an instant favorite. It was probably the first movie I thought of thinking of this list because I'm like, man, I remember I was like, man, I wish I went to that school.
Yeah.
I wish I got that to be in a band when I was a kid.
Well, and you're in the classroom 90% of the time of this movie. So definitely a school movie. And it's written by Mike White, who is Ned Schneebly in the film, but also is the creator of the White Lotus.
Yeah. One of Jack Black's boys. Like he wrote all his movies too for him, basically, like Nacho Libre, everything from like Nacho Libre, I think, to Orange County, like all kinds of stuff.
So yeah. Orange County, another good school movie.
Yeah.
True.
Great flick.
Grant, you're number three.
My number three. I mean, I guess this kind of fits because it revolves around school and I love it when it cuts back to it. I'm going with Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. Any of the John Hughes, I knew some of these movies were going to be on lists, so I left all the John Hughes off, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a great, you know, you talk about the progression of the school system in America, how some school districts are giving kids mental health days, like days they just don't have to show up and they don't get knocked or whatever. And, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is literally Ferris just like going to extreme lengths just to have a day to himself. And it is fantastic. And like I said, the balance of him having the time of his life with his girlfriend and his best friend, getting Cameron out of his head, and then cutting back to his sister at school and just like her having the worst day of her life. It's just a fantastic, great comedy.
Every single time I watch this movie, and I think we talked about this with Kalina on our Chicago episode, and that's the only reason why I didn't have it on there, because I, especially when we do these top fives, I want to try to like talk about new movies and things like that. But I knew it would get brought up. Jennifer Grey's performance as the sister is the thing that I like when I do go back and watch it, because like I've, you know, we all have the Cameron lines memorized and the Ferris lines memorized and stuff like that. She is so effing funny in this movie. Her like inner monologue, the voiceovers that she has to herself, like that
her face acting,
that zoom when it comes all the way down the hallway and she's leaned up against the lockers, great stuff. Mr. Rooney is the president or is the principal, like one of the worst, like worst slash best school principals in a movie ever, obviously, like the iconic Ben Stein. Like Bueller,
the
probably
secretary.
Like the secretary, so funny. Some of the best school scenes ever in movie history take place in this film.
And
for
the soundtrack too. I mean, classic 80s. You know, the Don Kishane parade scene is iconic. One of the few movies allowed to use the Star Wars theme. During that scene where the Ferrari, you know, just a fun flick. That's my number three.
Okay, my number three, I'm telling you, I'm all over the board here. My number three is the 2006 film Half Nelson. And now Half
dark.
Nelson.
Talk about dark.
Yeah.
Never heard of
this. Directed by Ryan Fleck. It's Ryan Gosling as a history teacher at a Brooklyn junior high. And he happens to have a crack problem. He's a like super smart dude, though, very well intended, like loves teaching, always is talking about dialectics in his classroom and really trying to make like history fun for these kids. And these kids love him. He coaches the girls' basketball team. They all love him. One of his students, though, one day finds it. And I won't spoil too much of this film, because I think that a lot of people probably have just not seen this movie. Really great stuff from early Anthony Mackie. Like, obviously, already been in 8 Mile and a few other things that really put him on the map. But this was like when I looked back at supporting actor for that year, I was like, he easily could have been in here. And Gosling, honestly, Gosling this year loses to Forest Whitaker for Last King of Scotland, but I'm like, this guy had to have come in second place, because basically everybody else on there are just like, they're collecting lifetime achievement nominations. Like, it's Peter O'Toole's getting shit and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, Gosling like is so good in this movie. But yeah, so basically one of his students catches him in the locker room after a basketball practice getting high. And then they kind of have to, like, he sort of has to develop this, like, extracurricular relationship with her where he's like, no, I'm going to, like, take, like, I'm going to have a big investment in your life, make sure, like, you stay straight or whatever, because she's related to Anthony Mackie, who's, like, the neighborhood drug dealer, kind of. And so they have this whole kind of, like, intertwined life where he's trying to get, you know, if she ends up dropping out of school, he knows she's going to end up like working for Anthony Mackie. Mm-hmm. There's this really emotional scene at the end in a hotel room. you know, this movie's very aware of the white savior trope.
Yeah.
And it like plays on that and shows him as like this damaged guy who literally just like is coming to terms basically throughout the movie that like he can't save these kids because he can't save himself. It's just like really, really powerful stuff. When I went back and watched it, I'm getting choked up this past week. And I'm just like, for 2006, Ryan Gosling, this is like, this is great stuff. And not that I think that he doesn't still have this in him. I just don't know how interested Ryan Gosling is in acting anymore, really. And so I don't know if we'll ever really get to see. Place Beyond the Pines is probably the closest we got. Things like Blue Valentine there as well. But I don't really know. If you like want to go see one of Gosling's top four or five performances, this movie has to be mentioned in there. And it, yeah, it's just a great, great school movie because a lot of the scenes with him in the classroom where he's like hyping these kids up on history and stuff like that, they don't feel corny. They don't feel forced. It feels really authentic. So I love this movie. I'm really happy to go back and revisit it.
Dang. Add it to the list.
Yeah. Number two for me is the Todd Phillips classic Old School.
Honorable mention. I knew someone would have it. Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, just one, again, in that mid-2000s, just one of the greatest comedies of all time. Really, that mid-2000s was like a gold mine for comedies. Once they figured out how to do the rated R comedy, but I mean, this film from Vince Vaughn, Will Ferrell, Luke Wilson, Jeremy Piven, Snoop Dogg, you know, it's just, it's a classic. Everyone knows a bunch of lines from it. It's got some great scenes. And it's, again, another really good, like, college movie that, you know, college movies, I mean, I only have what, two college movies on my list, and I don't know how much college really gets centered in these school movies, and especially like this is, even though they don't really go into a classroom ever, but you know, being on the college campus and having that experience, just a solid movie and one of my favorites.
Hits all the tropes. You have like the competition thing that we talked about at the end. They're between them. The romance too. Romance is another thing that we haven't really brought up yet. His whole relationship with Ellen Pompeo. Mm-hmm. You know, every one of these movies has to kind of have like the guy trying to get the girl or vice versa. And it's just so funny that this is like with a bunch of early 30-year-olds like on a college campus when they don't even go to the school really. I was going to have it on here. Knew somebody else would. I think it definitely deserves to be in a top five for someone.
Yeah, if we weren't quoting Anchorman, we were quoting Old School back in the day.
Oh, I literally say earmuffs and things like that all the time still.
I mean, you couldn't go to a party without someone yelling, "We're going streaking!"
Oh, yeah. You're my boy, Blue. Yeah. Just so
tastes
many
so
things.
Good. Every wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Frank the Tank.
Every wedding I go to, someone will yell out at one point, "You're my boy, Blue!"
And everyone knows exactly. Yeah. Everyone's just like, a good old school joke. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. My number two, and the one I had the most fun rewatching. Okay. Some parts don't hold up past the test of time, but it's still great. And it holds a special place in my heart, I'm sure, to you guys too, because it was filmed right in our backyard. Going with 10 Things I Hate About You.
Great pick.
Yep. Talk about just the classic school tropes of a school movie. I mean, you get the party scene, you get the kid, you know, taking extra classes to get the girl. You have Heath Ledger's character is just like overly mysterious and just, you know, like he's only taking all of the dangerous classes like woodworking and jewelry and, you know, things he gets to play with fire. it's still funny. Like the because it is based off of Taming of the Shrew, the William Shakespeare play, and it still kind of plays out like a stage play. Like the comic relief is almost like there because it needs to be. Not that it's like coherent, like just Michael on his bike, just biffing down that hill randomly, the dad with his workout equipment. Like there's just some random moments in there that are just some good comedy. But early Heath Ledger and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are fantastic. David Krumholtz at that party in his like suit and tie, just trying
David
to dance with these chicks.
The whole movie is
so good.
Funny.
Yeah.
Gabby Union in there, early Gabrielle Union.
Yeah. And it's the classic of, you know, you do something for a motive, but then you end up liking the girl, but then she finds out, and like the whole, like, you know, connection story between them is great on both sides of Bianca to Cameron too.
This is our first like true rom-com, I would probably say. Mean Girls maybe could fit in there, but Mean Girls is also just like a straight up hilarious movie. But in the rom-com high school, key ingredient, like top of the list, is like a relationship based around a bet.
Yeah.
Always. Always. Whether it's she's all that.
Yep.
Yep. It just has to be. Or cruel intentions. Always, you know, like I always think about that one too. So this is great. I'm happy the 10 things I hate about you is on there.
There is one really funny thing I thought about this movie. So the poetry class that she's in the entire time, they go to that class several times. That teacher is great.
Mean as hell, though.
Mean as hell. He's like, it, you go back to that part where the kid says something that's like smarter and like the teacher connects with
yes,
him. Like,
yeah.
there's a part where she says something like she's excited about this assignment. And he's like, get out of my class.
Yes.
And it's like, what? But that entire time you have her, you have the Joey character in there, and you have their back and forth banter. And then at the end, all of a sudden Heath Ledger's in that class. They never show him in that class the entire movie. That all of a sudden he's been there the entire time.
Dude, I'll say that last scene in that classroom too. Julia Stiles, some of the best acting.
One take.
Whew.
That one take, the tears were not in the script. That was all her just laying it out there.
Great stuff there. If your kid's guidance counselor ever looks acts like Allison Janney in that movie, switch schools.
Yeah,
now.
Get out. But it's on Disney Plus. It's I haven't watched it in years. It is worth a rewatch.
Definitely. Okay, my number two film, which is also always worth a rewatch, or for your first time, if somehow you've never seen the 1989 film Dead Poets Society, directed by Peter Weir. Wins Best Original Screenplay the year it comes out at the Oscars. Of course, this is kind of right before, or not, I shouldn't say right before, but this was like Robin Williams can do two different things here, mm-hmm. you know, and really show some range. We're obviously set at the Welton Academy for Boys, and this movie goes back to 1950. We're in New Hampshire, I believe it, New England, somewhere in New England. But this is my big one for like expectations. Like the young Ethan Hawke character has these expectations, kind of comes to find out that like all his classmates have these expectations set upon them from their families because their older brother went there or, you know, someone in their family went there, could be their dad went there, and, you know, they need to go to this school so that they can go become a doctor or a lawyer, work on Wall Street, something of that nature. And so, yeah, then you just get this great, great teacher. And it's not like this is – it's really cool because it's not like the White Savior movie, but it still is, but it's like with preparatory kids and stuff. So it doesn't feel as trite when you go back and watch it now because you're like, no, okay, he is like doing kind of the Goodwill Hunting thing here where he is like showing somebody that like – school and academics doesn't have to be all boring and all bad and stuff. Like, we can have fun. Me and my friends used to do this. We had our little thing where we went out to the cave at midnight. We read poetry and we got together and we made this like count and last, and these friendships matter. And that's another big thing too, that I was waiting for this movie. And I'm sure we could have touched on it with some of these other movies, but like the sense of camaraderie and brotherhood that goes along with like the people who you meet when you're either in junior high or in high school or in college, I think really resonates deeply with all these movies. And for my list, my number one is just such an AMAC pick. But like this honestly should be my number one, I feel like, Dead Poets Society, because of just the whole like nonconformity message behind it and things like that. That the first time I saw this movie, I was just like, wow, this movie gets it. This movie gets what like life should be like and how like I wish I had it. Not to say that I didn't have teachers that like made me excited about learning, but like this is such like the movie standard of like the best teacher you could ever have is Robin Williams. And of course, some tragic stuff happens along the way. I don't want to spoil any of it. But Dead Poets Society, one of the best.
Never seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah, that's on my list.
Has one of my favorite lines in any movie ever. Yeah. And I'm going to paraphrase it here, but it's when he...
Captain, oh, Captain?
Not that part. It's when he's talking to the kids and that line he has where he says, like, he's basically just talking about jobs and how those are good things to, like, maintain a good
yes.
life.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
then, like, art, relationship, friendships, love, romance, those are things we live for. I'm like, that's it's just it, the
when
whole,
everybody else in these kids' lives has been telling them like money, money, money.
Yeah.
You have to get ahead in life. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. He really comes in. He tells them, this is the first time that I really heard like carpe diem, which is like seize the day. Cause that's something else that he tells the kids all
it's
the time in this
scene.
Movie. Yeah. That's a great scene. His first scene where he's kind of teaching them that lesson. So yeah, there it is. Dead Poets Society. Number two. Okay. Love on it. To our number ones.
Number one is Wes Anderson's Rushmore for me. Wes Anderson, very, very important director to me. This movie, I always kind of didn't like Rushmore, But going back and rewatching it, like it had it, and it, trust me, it's got its problems.
Yes. But Bill Murray, what are you doing?
Bill Murray is a weirdo in this, but it is extremely like deeply funny, like on a under the surface level. It also, the Jason Schwartzman character, like his name is Max, I believe. Mm-hmm. But just really resonated with me because he's pretty much a film geek. Like he is the representation of Wes Anderson growing up in his high school. It shows a lot of good high school scenes, whether they're walking through the halls or he's the theater director there. But just a really good set in reality Wes Anderson movie, right? Like Wes Anderson, the movies after this kind of turn into like these kind of fantastical, a lot of the, you know, miniatures are used, where this is much more just like boots on the ground, on location. Just a really, really, really cool high school film, but even with a little bit fantastical in there.
Nice. I've never seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was kind of looking at you. I was just like, I wonder if Grant's seen this one.
No, yeah. My Wes Anderson repertoire is not very deep. I think I've only seen The Life Aquatic and The Royal Tenenbaums.
Well,
buckle up, because we're going to do a big French Dispatch episode.
Hell yeah. So, I'm excited.
Yeah. Take a deep dive in. No, I love Rushmore. Rushmore, to me, is in that same tier as like Moonrise Kingdom and some of those other movies, mm-hmm. Grand Budapest, that I really, really like of his. We don't need to have the Tenenbaums discussion or anything like that. But no, I really like this movie. I think that this has like when I went to high school, I like what you were saying about walking through the hallways and stuff. I expected like some hallways to look like this. I expected some people to dress like that, like with the big coats and kind of like the beret style hats and things like that, where I'm just like, this is like what I expect high school to be.
It also, it takes place over a whole school year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause he does it in chapters like he does most of his movies, but it's all by the seasons.
Right.
So you get a look at school throughout the year, which is interesting.
It's a fun one. Number one, huh? There you go.
Number one.
All right, Grant, you're number one.
My number one's my wild card. Because nothing says going back to school like wanting to kill everyone in your class.
Do we have the same?
Battle Royale.
Oh, no. Oh. That's great.
Yeah. One of my favorite films. It probably is my favorite Japanese film. I was blown away when my brother showed me this flick. If you've never heard about it, it is basically the movie that inspired The Hunger Games and kind of this whole trope. But it's in an alternate world. Well, not alternate, but alternate history timeline, where basically in Japan, the youth are just uprising and they're just troublemaking. They're not going to school. They're cutting class. The crime's at a high rate. So the government instigates this program where once a year they take a class of 30 kids and they transport them to this island, strap explosives to their neck, and say, you all have to now kill each other. Last person alive gets to go home. Go. Don't explain anything. Like, they all get like this pack that has like weapons and some supplies and stuff, and they're basically just thrown into this thing. And
the scene where they're in the like the big room together before they really know it's real,
yeah,
is so wild.
It is eerie, like the lead up to it. So, you know, of course these kids are cutting classes, so they lure them back saying like, you get to go on this field trip. So all these kids come back and they go on this field trip, and like while they're on the bus, you just see that they're passing like more and more like military vans, and like the
very dystopian.
Yeah, very dystopian feeling. And then that scene you're talking about when they're in that room on the island, then there's no music.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of their teachers is like their instructor, this guy that's just had it up to his ears with these kids. And the instruction video is like this really like happy, you know, like welcome to the island. Uh-huh. And it's just like, it is like this really like creepy, and like to show they mean business, you know, they kill a kid right off the bat. And it's like, it is a really great like action horror movie, because it is gruesome. There's a lot of gore, a lot of crazy cool shots of like, there's this one chick that just goes off the deep end, and the shots of her, she's one of the girls that she's in Kill Bill.
She's the go-go.
The go-go with the ball and chain. And so, you'll recognize some Japanese actors. There's a couple other familiar faces, especially the teacher, Kitano. But, I mean, it is a movie that will just kind of like, your jaw will just be to the floor the entire time. It is bonkers. There was a rumor that it got banned in the U.S., That it wasn't true. It just took forever for them to get licensing until Quentin Tarantino decided to
fund it.
Yeah. So that's why, like, if you buy the Blu-ray here in America, it basically says it's produced by Quentin Tarantino because he's the one that got it over here. It is a wild ride, but it is a fun flick.
Well, absolutely. And I've always really liked this movie because when the Hunger Games like sensation happened, I was just thinking like, I understand that it's like a young adult book, but how could you think that like this story is a PG-13 story?
Yeah.
Then you can, but it's always great when you know Battle Royale exists because you can just go back to that and that's like what it would be like if and you were actually forced to like kill your peers.
I believe it. They're ninth graders. They're supposed to be. So it's like they're teenagers just thrown onto this island.
This is also a really good double feature with The Condemned.
Oh, sure.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Where it's a bunch of
inmates
on an island.
Dropped on an island and kill each other. Yeah.
No, great pick there. It's your number one. I like it. Very a wild card, but very fitting. Yeah. Okay, well, any guesses as to what mine is then? If I thought we might have tied. You're going to kill everybody at your high school?
Jennifer's Body?
Scream?
1976's Carrie.
Carrie. Oh, yeah. It's one of my honorable mentions. Yeah.
You know, not too much to say about Carrie. Another one of those where it's had its time on this podcast before. We obviously love De Palma and bring it up all the time. Everyone's probably seen Carrie 2 at this point, whether it's this one or God forbid you saw the remake. I just think that like for Stephen King and Brian De Palma to come together and make this like coming of age story about a woman who's like discovering herself, her sexuality, these supernatural powers that she has. It's just like it's incredible. I just love this movie so much. It's October. It's time to fire up horror movies again. I have a couple more, like I said, that I'll get to on my honorable mentions. But Carrie, if it was going to be on my list, it couldn't be anywhere but number one. So there it is. Not much more to
solid.
Say.
No, that's great. Barry Alex.
Yeah. So let's get to these honorable mentions now that we've talked so much about. You guys have your list ready to go?
I do, yeah.
Okay, go for it.
Clueless was one of the first ones that popped out. Donnie Darko, we just recently talked about that flick.
Well, yep.
Dope.
Ah,
I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's a great film. Doesn't really take place at school, but you know, coming of age kind of in California story. Rebel Without a Cause, going the classic route. Carrie was on there. One that I thought of as we were having this episode is all of the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
The Tobey Maguire scenes of him getting his powers and the high school fights. Andrew Garfield with the basketball scene, you know, going against Flash. And then, you know, Tom Holland's, it just basically entirely takes place in high school and, you know, in the party and all that. So
it's called Homecoming.
Yeah, exactly.
I even know this much. Yeah.
And then with that other superhero stuff, the X-Men movies, you know, the whole Xavier school is always like fun to see, like, especially in Days of Future Past when you actually get to see them as teachers. And then Chronicle. Another one. I mean, 10 Things I Hate About You filmed in our backyard. Chronicles sort of filmed in our backyard. It's a fun one. Definitely has like the high school, you know, experience of three guys that normally wouldn't be friends come together and you get to see similar situations told through all three of their eyes. And I don't know.
Chronicles insanely rewatchable.
Yeah.
Such a
good Dane DeHaan gets it gets cringy sometimes at his he does a good job of that rise to, to evil or whatever, but
power.
Yeah, it is a rewatchable one. Yeah, I like that one a lot.
I had Mean Girls. I had the John Hughes High School trilogy, which 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, and of course Ferris Bueller.
Is Say Anything John Hughes?
No,
it feels
like
it is,
but it's not.
Okay,
Dazed and Confused. I had 10 Things I Hate About You, Edge of 17, Election. Easy A.
Yep.
Easy A. Nice.
21 Jump Street, Scream. And then I don't know if I thought maybe Alex would try and make a case, but for The Social Network.
I have it in bold here.
Yeah.
I literally have it in bold because I can't believe you didn't have it on your list.
I was going to put it on my list. I'm like, one of them's going to bring it up. Because they're at Harvard.
Most of the time.
For one of the timelines, they're basically there the entire time.
No, I'm really surprised you didn't have it on there. I thought Matt, I would literally said to Haley, I think Max is going to get cute and try to have The Social Network on there. And I'm going to allow it because like it totally fits. Okay, so let's see. What haven't you guys talked about already? So some of the ones I have the Social Network.
I'm going to count how many I like have in my head okay. that are going to be on your list.
Okay, so of these ones here that I have bolded, it's just because I feel like we've already talked about them a lot on the pod. And so Social Network's one of those. Donnie was one of yeah. those. A movie that I've talked about a bunch. Is on yep, my list.
Ding, one.
Yeah. Yep, there you go. Lady Bird.
Yeah,
like, Lady Bird. Yep. Was really wanting that on there. Raw, which is like very different, but it's like a veterinarian school.
That's
and,
very true.
Julia Ducournau is coming out with Titan in mm-hmm. like a couple of weeks, so I hope you guys are ready for me just to talk about that movie like non-stop. And so I almost wanted to put Raw on there, but talked about that one a bunch. Okay, so then I also have Heathers. I have Animal House. I have Dangerous Minds, but that's just like way too much white savior stuff from mm-hmm. Michelle Pfeiffer in there. Cruel Intentions, which I already Dang. Brought up. Legally Blonde, but then oh, I was yeah. like Mean Girls, I think, just does everything kind of yeah. better. And then, okay, so then I have Urban Legend, which I had a lot of fun going back and rewatching. That's just like a great, you know, rip off of Scream, basically, there in the late 90s, but does enough to stay like original, kind of early Jared Leto stuff in there that's like really, really good. Aquila and the Bee, which yeah. is a really cool spelling bee movie.
Fishburne.
Larry that's, Fishburne, yeah.
Is Oh, that's Fishburne. I thought, was that Denzel? No.
No, no. Fishburne. And then, okay, here's the big one that I can't believe nobody's mentioned yet, but like every Harry Potter movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah.
Not a huge HP fan.
I mean, I'm not
I've
either,
only,
but
I've
like,
only seen the first three.
If you're going to do like a Mount Rushmore of fictional schools, Hogwarts has to be that's, on it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, for,
like,
for sure.
You do the John Hughes High School, whatever that's called. I can't believe I'm blanking on it, but like Hogwarts has got to be up there. I can't really think of what else. But no, as you can see, we're jumping all over genres. Bunch of different movies that can fall under this big umbrella. So, but that'll wrap up our top fives here. We'll go back through. Max had Accepted at five, then went Elephant, School of Rock, Old School, and Rushmore. Grant at five had School of Rock, then went Back to the Future, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 10 Things I Hate About You, and Battle Royale. Myself at five went Rules of Attraction, then had Mean Girls, Half Nelson, Dead Poets Society, and Carrie to round it out. We feel about those lists. Those are good lists.
Those are great
one,
lists.
One crossover.
Yeah,
just
really.
School, yeah, school just of School rock. Rock.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Not a lot yeah. there. So just a quick reminder here before we sign off that there is still plenty of time to jump on and experience the full benefits of a month's Patreon subscription as we will be hosting our video chat AMA next Tuesday, September 28th from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., where we will hold just an open forum over a video call for a full hour and get to chat with you guys about whatever you want, what you've been watching, anything that you want to ask us about. Just, the list can go on and on. We're open. We're ready. We're excited. As for what's coming down the pike next week on the show for us, it'll be part two of our September roundtable, where we will be discussing three more new releases to close out this month of September, those films being The Guilty, Dear Evan Hansen, and Cry Macho. The Guilty is coming out pretty soon on Netflix. Cry Macho is already out on HBO, so you guys can feel free to check those out for yourself. Then tune in to hear our takes. You guys excited about these movies? Max, you've already seen Cry Macho.
I've watched, yeah. Yeah, it was a really good zombie movie. Cry Macho was interesting. Dear Evan Hansen, another musical, right?
Yep.
So, going to be watching that. And then The Guilty, I'm very excited to watch.
I'm very excited for The Guilty as well. I think that it's good for us to watch and discuss movies like Evan Hansen and their effectiveness, though.
I mean, the trailer for it that I've had to watch several times before the movies I've seen in the theaters, like, I just hope that the trailer is just dogging this movie, because the trailer does not entice
the
me at
all. The song's kind of catchy.
It is, but it was just like, I don't know. It was just a little too much. Plus, it was one of those trailers to where I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've seen the movie already now. But
okay, so it was one of those films where, or it seems like one of those films where, yes, most of the good parts are shown in the trailer. But now, this not being a horror movie or anything that I was like super excited about seeing when the trailer came on, I wasn't doing like a head in the hand or leave the theater thing. I'm just kind of like, okay, let's see what this is about. I think it's going to be pretty effective.
It could be on the high school movies next year.
I love the message. I hope it does well because of the whole thing behind it. I just hope, like I said, the trailer just to me just did not get me excited. Cry Macho, I have no idea what it's about. I just know that it's old man Clint doing
Clint doing old man Clint things. Yeah.
The corpse.
The corpse. Savior.
That's got some white savior shit in it.
The Guilty, I am very excited for. That trailer got me on the edge of my seat. And then I just found
Let's fucking go. Garbage Crime, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, like, right?
I'm so excited.
The movie it's based off of, the original Danish one, is on Hulu. And I've just heard only good things about it. So if you don't mind subtitles and you can't wait till the first, you got it on Hulu. You can get a little preview.
Cool. Okay. And so then, as always, if you're headed out to the theaters to see anything else, remember to please be safe, wear a mask, and practice social distancing. And until next time, we will see you in detention.
Stay swell and do your homework.
Drink movies and watch keggers.